This is The Political Scene, and I'm David Remnick. This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick, and we're spending the entire hour talking about the eruption of protest on college campuses across the country. We're focusing in particular on Harvard University, where much of the turmoil began. In December, Harvard's president, along with two other college leaders, was summoned to Congress to hearings about whether a climate of anti-Semitism exists on campus. This has become a real issue. Some on the right, Elise Stefanik and Ron DeSantis, among others, have seized on some distinctly ugly instances and then, as some have argued, exploited the situation, making fighting anti-Semitism a distinctly partisan political cause. I spoke earlier in the program with Lawrence Summers, a former Harvard president, who said that the way the university presidents conducted themselves in the hearings was, and this is his word, a disaster. So I put this question to Randall Kennedy. Kennedy is a longtime professor at Harvard Law School, and he wrote, to my mind, a brilliant essay on the subject in the London Review of Books.
I thought the college presidents responded like I'm used to seeing academics respond. They listened. They were very painstaking. They made careful distinctions. Some people said that, well, they acted in a lawyerly way. And of course, that was meant to be a put down. I view it differently. I'm a lawyer. Now, immediately, people said, well, these college presidents are naive. Shouldn't they have known that this was, you know, mere political drama? Well, you know, they stayed within their role. They allowed the politicians to act in their role. If they wanted to be demagogues, fine, go be a demagogue.
I guess, Randy, what the critique was, the sympathetic critique, was that these college presidents were prepped unto a fare-thee-well by, in fact, one law firm, so far as I know. And the best approach would have been, because they're not in a deposition, they're in a political theater, whether you like it or not, to begin the answer by expressing outrage against the obvious, and then a more nuanced answer, and then another expression of outrage. You've put the truth, the nuanced truth, in between two slices of theater.
David, I have now read the transcript several times. And Claudine Gay said on several occasions, I abhor the rhetoric of the students. I abhor the rhetoric of the demonstrators. She said that over and over. And then her tormentors would come back in order to get the precise, 20 seconds that they wanted. I got to give Elise Stefanik and her colleagues credit. They were very dogged. They were very persistent. And I think that people, frankly, have a misimpression of what went down at the congressional hearing.
I want to go backwards a little bit. Why were they sitting in Congress in the first place? Why did Claudine Gay find herself in front of Elise Stefanik?
Oh, I think for a variety of things. I mean, the immediate cause was the Hamas attack, the response by students, which suggested to many indifference to the horror, or maybe even an embrace of the horror. And then there was the feeling that the university authorities had not responded to those students. And I think that one of the things that really had a lot of punch was when people at Harvard, like the former president of Harvard, Larry Summers, said, listen, a couple years ago, when there were the outrages with respect to the police, you know, the George Floyd moment, college presidents, reacted pronto. There was a lot of motion behind their reaction. Why not now?
Randy, I spoke earlier on the program with one of the student organizers involved in a statement about October 7th. How did you react to that statement and its lack of condemnation for Hamas's October 7th attack?
Yeah. First, I read about the student open letter, and my reaction was very negative. Very soon thereafter, I read the critique of Claudine Gay. And here, I must say, I was a little bit mystified. You know, I'd say within a day, there was the allegation that she had not responded quickly enough. Well, what's quickly enough? It would be one thing if some time had gone by and there was an objection, but the objection came very quickly. And I thought too quickly.
What are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that folks were out to get Claudine Gay from the get-go and were going to use any openings with which to do that.
But President Shafiq of Colombia came in and expressed her outrage over and over and over again and got rid of any, you know, trace of being in a deposition. She knew she was in a political theater. But on the other hand, she adjudicated in real time the fate of some of her professors during the hearing.
I'm very glad that you mentioned that. Compare Claudine Gay and the other presidents in the fall to the testimony of the people from Colombia. The president of Colombia, the law professor, the members of the board of trustees at Columbia, in my view, their testimony was humiliating for people in academia. I thought it was absolutely terrible. They clearly were willing to say anything that they thought that the Congress people wanted to hear.
Wasn't the right answer, not to tilt things, but wasn't the right answer to say, Congressman, I will definitely look into those statements, but we will adjudicate our faculty decisions on our own? That's what academic freedom is all about, and that's what running a university is about. And the Congresswoman from upstate New York doesn't get to do it.
That would have been a nice statement. But to get back to Claudine Gay, I would say this. In her testimony, one thing that she did do was to stay true to her role. And that is something that the president of Colombia did not do.
What then accounts for those student groups and their initial reaction to October 7th, which I have to say, as a journalist, but also as a Jew who's been around for a while, I'm not insensitive to these manifestations, but nor do I yell anti-Semitism as a general condition at every moment. Mm-hmm. So what accounted for that reaction?
You mean their inattentiveness to the horror of the Hamas attack?
That's one way of putting
it. Okay. I don't know. Let me say this. A few years ago, there were people who said that our alma mater, Princeton University, and other liberal elite institutions, that they were systematically racist. That was just a few years ago. They were wrong. And just like the allegations now are wrong, and I link them because I think that there is a similar dynamic at work. In both instances, you have terrible things that happen to minority groups that have a baleful history of oppression. And in both instances, you have groups that use what's at hand to protect themselves and to advance their interests. In both instances, as far as I'm concerned, what you have is the use of mau-mauing. You have the use of guilt-tripping. You have the use of an exaggeration of actual racism or actual anti-Semitism. So you have the creation of microaggressions, just like today you have the inflation of anti-Semitism. So now if you criticize Zionism, that is anti-Semitism. I think there's a usefulness in comparing the George Floyd moment and what happened at universities and this moment, the October 7th moment.
I wonder how you assess, almost in a scholarly way, why Claudine Gay resigned or was forced to resign. You had the accusations of plagiarism. You had the heated debate about October 7th and the war in Gaza. You had politics on campus. And you also had big money getting involved in this. You had Bill Ackman and others saying, I'm going to pull my money out and I'm going to put pressure on the people who really run Harvard, which is a very small number. How do you assess that?
Well, I think you just named very important factors. The money factor, very important. I mean, after all, what is it that college presidents do? One of their most important functions is raising money, and lots of it. And who do they raise the money from? Well, you know, they raise the money from their alums, but they also raise money from people who have very deep pockets and make very big bequests. You know, again, I want to emphasize, there was a sector of the professoriate that was intensely resentful, did not like at all the diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging ethos that she embraced and voiced. And then you had...
Would you say that was a racist corner?
Some racist, some sexist, some not. I'm not, you know, not everybody mm-hmm. who takes that position is racist or sexist.
As a professor of law as well as an observer, is there a legal definition of what types of actions or speech constitute anti-Semitism or racism and speech that needs, for want of a better word, policing on the campus of a place like Harvard?
No, is the answer. Is there a legal definition for racist speech? No, there's not a legal definition for racist speech.
So how do you juggle the imperatives between, on the one hand, freedom of speech, which is a very complicated discussion these days, and on the other hand, the need for an environment at a university of, I hate this word, safety, but mm-hmm. safety to a free inquiry mm-hmm. And freedom of thought. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to say something, and I'm being puckish. It all depends. So, for instance, let's take safety. When I hear safety, I think of physical safety. Am I worried about somebody, you know, beaning me in the head? The word safety now has, again, been very much inflated. You know, I can say, you've said something, David, that really bothers me deeply. It makes me anxious. And now I feel unsafe. So, I mean, one of the things that we're grappling with, and it's not just in the universities, our culture. Harvard University has been sued by a group of students. And one of their claims is that Harvard University is in violation of federal law because Harvard University has allowed the creation of an environment that right. oppresses Jewish students. And then you're reading their complaint and they say, well, and you know, what are the particulars? They say, well, Harvard University tolerates anti-Semitism. What is anti-Semitism? They have a sentence in there that says, well, if you say that you're against Zionism, if you question the legitimacy of Zionism, that is anti-Semitism. If that lawsuit prevails, I take it that means that it would be unlawful for Harvard University to allow the teaching of a viewpoint that is anti-Zionist. I mean, this is very dangerous. but
which includes Hannah Arendt and many others before the rise of
Israel. Think of the thinkers that would be outlawed if that in fact was to become, you know, law.
Randall Kennedy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Randall Kennedy, professor of law at Harvard University.